Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as, well, an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man whose intelligence I have been extraordinarily impressed by over many years now is a friend and colleague, in fact, a senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy. He is also the founder and CEO of Freeman Global Investment Council, the founder of National Security Investment Counselors Institute, and again, a man who has distinguished himself both in the financial sector and in the best-selling book business with his two books, Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack, and Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. He is, of course, Kevin Freeman. Kevin, welcome back. It's good to have you with us. And thank you for taking a full hour to discuss with us so many topics of which I know you're as concerned as I am. And I look forward to doing so.
Oh, thanks, Frank. It's good to be here.
Well, let's start with the developments of yesterday, Kevin. The IMF, the International Monetary Fund, included for the first time the Chinese currency, the renminbi, in its so-called special drawing rights basket of currencies. What exactly does all that mean? And does this move the Chinese dramatically closer to their goal of having their currency become one of, if not the reserve currency of the world?
Well, in fact, the IMF's recognition does exactly that. The Chinese yuan has moved up, or also known as the renminbi, has moved up into that elite group of currencies that includes the U.S. dollar, the euro, the British pound, the Japanese yen. And it does so in dramatic fashion. It went from 0% in the strategic drawing right basket to 11%, which means it passed the yen and the British pound and moved only behind the dollar and the euro. So it is a huge step forward, something that the Chinese have been pushing for in very recent years and something that the PLA has been pushing for many years.
And what does it mean precisely, Kevin, in terms of how they got that done? Did they qualify under the rules that have been applied that had heretofore kept them out? And more to the point, will it likely supplant, if not in the very near future, in due course, the dollar as, again, the reserve currency of the world?
Well, the dollar is about 42% of the strategic drawing rights, and they did not, special drawing rights, they did not reduce the valuation or the weighting of the dollar, which I think was a move to kind of assuage fears. But in the long run, that is clearly the intention. We have document after document from Vladimir Putin working with the Chinese to an announcement that the Chinese Communist Party officially wants to de-Americanize the world and remove the dollar. This is a long-term part of their strategy. I don't know if they'll be effective or not, but it is something that they've been working on. If they are successful and remove the dollar as the primary reserve currency, then when people want to invest, they will be investing in China and not the United States. They will be buying Chinese debt and Chinese bonds and not American bonds, which means that with our $20 trillion almost federal debt, we will find it very difficult to continue to finance that, to pay defense costs, to continue to have welfare payments and other things that we have. It will be a budget catastrophe. And that is the end game, end goal of a group in China and a group in Russia.
And this is evidenced by, among other things, I guess, the document that you and I have discussed on many occasions, Kevin Freeman, a booklet called Unrestricted Warfare, going back to, I guess, 1999, published by a couple of PLA colonels. Is that, in fact, what's happening now is one manifestation of the kind of economic warfare strategy that they laid out against the United States?
I absolutely believe that is the case. Even preceding that, in 1998, a man named Igor Panarin, a close friend of Putin's, approached a group in Europe with a conference and said the American dollar would collapse and China and Russia will pick up the pieces. And it has been evidenced and documented since then multiple times in major press, like the Wall Street Journal and other places, where they've been making these moves, but almost hidden in plain sight. We've just ignored the reality of it, much the same as we've ignored the Iranian intentions and struck a deal with them. I think the IMF just struck a deal with China, and the West got nothing in return.
Do you think, Kevin, because this has been the normal practice for the Chinese with respect to, I think, of the World Trade Organization, the Law of the Sea treaty organizations, that China has essentially bent the rules to their purposes, or did they, in fact, measure up against the rules that everybody else is supposed to have been judged by, including those currently in the SDR basket?
I don't believe they're measuring up, but even worse, they're flaunting outside the rules with continued cyber hacking, the kind of things that we should have demanded before they entered in the reserve currency status. We should have demanded that they respected international law in terms of the South China Sea. We should have demanded that they respected sovereign nations and their cyber capabilities and so forth. They have committed such intellectual property theft through cyber means and other means, the threats and the satellites and everything else, they're acting completely belligerent towards the rest of the world, and yet we're treating them as equals and partners.
We're talking again with Kevin Freeman, the author of Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack. And Kevin, did we have it within our power, within the IMF, to prevent China from getting access to this special status, or at least to meeting some of these requirements before they did so?
We are the primary supporter of the International Monetary Fund and have been for years. But in recent years, the IMF has distanced themselves somewhat from the United States as they have courted China. They've actually treated China as a plum to be brought in. And the requirements, they said in August, they rejected the inclusion of the yuan in the basket. And they said, well, you're just not ready for it. And here it is, you know, just a few months later. It's supposed to be that they revise the basket every 5 years, 2010, 2015, 2020. But China got the opportunity to correct a few minor things and get included in the basket afterwards. And so that is kind of the it's unprecedented that I'm aware of. It is certainly unusual. I'd expected after they rejected them in August that it would take several years before they would consider including them, and theoretically it would have taken to 2020. It didn't take. It took just 3 months.
And I guess we probably don't know the full particulars of how this came to pass, but knowing what you do, Kevin, about the financial sector and about the IMF and about how the Chinese work, would it surprise you if there were corrupt individuals or other shenanigans at work here?
It wouldn't surprise me at all. This is a government that just, you know, they switched from a one child to a two child policy. They bought 6% of their stock market. The government has actually intervened in the stock market and bought 6% of it, propping up the stock market. They manipulate on global terms across the board, and it's all laid out as a strategy. They pretend like they're capitalists and they're communists. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Well, communists, of course, is something that they're not allowed to be called anymore. Kevin, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about what the Chinese are facing themselves at the moment that they're pulling off these kinds of hat tricks. There's a lot of concern, it seems, in the China Watcher circles. And not, by the way, just the critics, but even the so-called panda huggers. That China's economy is plunging and it may prove irrecoverable for the Chinese Communist Party, which has been trying, as you say, through some of the techniques that you've just described, to maintain its hold on power. We'll discuss some of those issues and much, much more in this very special edition of Secure Freedom Radio with Kevin Freeman, a senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy and the founder of the National Security Investment Counselors Institute, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Jared Ogden, former Navy SEAL and member of Team Military on National Geographic Channel's Ultimate Survival Alaska. I want to tell you about an issue that you probably haven't heard much about. Thousands of America's veterans are suffering from occupational and environmental exposures that they were exposed to while serving in the military. We call these the toxic wounds of war. From Agent Orange and Gulf War illness to post-9/11 burn pit exposure and heavy metals in the air, and other toxic exposures that we don't fully understand. The Sergeant Sullivan Center is a powerful voice in our nation's capital, standing watch over these forgotten wounded. These men and women can't do it alone, and they need your help today. Every dollar raised by Sergeant Sullivan Center goes to medical research, public awareness, and advocacy. You can make a tax-deductible donation today at www.sergeantsullivancenter.org. That's SGTSullivanCenter.org.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. Our guest is Kevin Freeman. We are having a special hour-long session with one of the real gurus about economic security and threats to our financial sector and more. He is the founder and CEO of Freeman Global Investment Counsel, a boutique investment advisory firm, but he is best known perhaps for his two best-selling books, the original one, Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. His second book, Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack. And Kevin, we were talking in the previous segment about China. It's finally securing at last a long-sought goal of becoming one of the reserve currencies of the world and what it might mean for us. In my conversations each week with Gordon Chang, we've been discussing now for a while the increasing economic difficulties China is facing and what that might mean not just for China, but also for the region and for our vital interests. I wonder, are you convinced, as Gordon seems to be, that China has kind of entered what may be a 30s-style crash moment?
Well, that's quite possible. They have manipulated their way to prosperity, both through currency manipulation, intellectual property theft, overbuilding domestic infrastructure, basically a mercantilist type approach to undermining and undercutting global trade and stealing secrets and so forth. So they are due for a crash. My concern is that they are using means by which they're exporting the economic pain, one of which would be as a reserve currency, they could con people into acquiring large amounts of their debt that will never be repaid.
Our guest is Kevin Freeman. We're talking China at the moment, and you've described the possibility, Kevin, that there will be an economic collapse in China, possibly staved off at least for a time by exporting some of it. If they are unable to maintain the control on their economy that has enabled them to maintain their control of the political system in China, do you anticipate, knowing what you do about the JICOMs, that they will, in fact, conjure up pretext for external aggression, a kind of social engineering that we've seen previous authoritarian regimes engage in, to the detriment, again, not only of their neighbors, but perhaps of the United States and its vital interests as well?
Well, if we assume that the Chinese have watched the history, and they have, of how the United States dollar displaced the British pound and how that led into, ultimately there was a Great Depression that came from that after a stock market boom in 1929, and we went to a worldwide depression, which was ended with a world war. One might imagine that they could sweep some economic problems under the rug with belligerent warlike behavior. It would certainly hold the domestic population a little better in line, and at the same time, it would create a need for manufacturing, which they have plenty of capability in the manufacturing arena, and they're acting very aggressively around the world. So certainly members of the People's Liberation Army, which is a very powerful faction, owns and controls a lot of the businesses that are Chinese businesses around the world, would point to that. They would like a war.
And when you look at the places in which that warfare could take place, Kevin, two are obvious, I guess, at this point. One, the South China Sea. Another, space, in which the Chinese are increasingly assertive about their intentions to control what's been called the high frontier, with economic as well as security implications for the rest of us. How about other parts of the world, however, closer to home? For example, I'm thinking of the Panama Canal. I'm thinking of the Caribbean. I'm thinking of Africa. Do you see this truly being a global challenge?
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen evidence in all of the areas that you've mentioned. And then yet we're seeing also an effort to cover up the advances, much the same as the Nazis did prior to World War II. The Chinese have been buying up American radio stations. and they've been trying to get on the radio with I guess Radio Free China or something that is an attempt to influence the policymakers in the United States, and they've had great effect in that area. They've had great effect in intellectual property laws and patent rights and everything else with lobbying organizations here. And so yes, it's across the board unrestricted warfare in every area and every dimension, just as it was laid out in the 1999 book.
Would you throw into that mix the Trans-Pacific Partnership, Kevin Freeman? This is a document that we have been told was designed to keep the Chinese out. The Secretary of Defense has said it's worth a carrier battle group in the Pacific for that reason. And yet, John Kerry has indicated that he would welcome both the Chinese and the Russians into it, even before Congress has its say about approving this document. What do you think?
Well, absolutely. They've been influencing the document from a distance. They weren't invited in initially, but they've been influencing the document. And this administration, as we've seen with the Iran negotiations and elsewhere, does not appear to have purely American interests at heart. Rather, the documents that come out, the negotiations and the agreement, generally come out with America on the short end of the stick.
And if the Chinese were, in fact, to become part of the Trans-Pacific Partnership through this docking mechanism, I think it's called, Kevin, would you anticipate that, as we were discussing earlier, you would once again see the rules bent to favor China, that we may well find ourselves very much at the losing end of an arrangement that we have been told was designed to protect us against precisely this kind of Chinese predation?
That's exactly right. We go in with one intention and purpose, and we find that we've lost on all counts. And the Chinese, I don't feel comfortable with the negotiating skills of the present team.
Yeah, well, that goes without saying, really, especially if you look at some of their accomplishments like the Iran deal and, the Taliban 5 exchange for a deserter and on and on. Kevin, just in closing here, one other place in which the Chinese are playing an outsized role this week and next will be in connection with the so-called climate change conference in Paris. Very quickly, what's your sense of what they're doing there and whether it will serve our interests?
Part of unrestricted warfare had environmental rules as a means of conducting warfare. A perfect example is the Chinese negotiated and supported the idea that America would ban the stripping of rare earth minerals, and they made it look like a horrible thing for Americans to do, and thus they monopolized rare earth minerals, and these are essential for a lot of the electronics and a lot of the things that modern society does. And so there's no doubt that they have been manipulating environmental rules and processes. The climate, the whole carbon limitations apply to America. Had we entered the Kyoto treaties before, they would apply to America, but China would be exempt. And so we would actually ship our manufacturing to China where it would produce more carbon net, not less. And that's the kind of manipulations that they're good at.
And I guess even under this administration, we've seen the Chinese get a pass until 2030 when they are supposed to cap their emissions. Another scam, since we are supposed to be making substantial cuts even now. Kevin Freeman, we're going to pause for one more break, and we will come back to discuss another piece of the national security portfolio with which I know you've been greatly concerned, as have we, the security of our electric grid. That and more with Kevin Freeman right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute.
Yesterday may be remembered as when our economic well-being and national security began changing forever. That's because the International Monetary Fund, for the first time, included the Chinese yuan among the world's reserve currencies. It even treated China's money as more valuable than that of Japan and the United Kingdom. Economic warfare expert Kevin Freeman warns that this step by the IMF clears the way for Communist China eventually to realize a long-standing goal: de-Americanizing international finance by displacing the U.S. dollar's status as the preeminent global reserve currency. That would essentially preclude the U.S. from internationalizing its nearly $20 trillion debt, sending interest rates skyrocketing and plunging the economy into freefall. President Obama could have used the United States' clout at the IMF to prevent this from happening, yet he didn't. Further evidence that he's playing for the other team. This is Frank Gaffney.
They are fathers and mothers, someone's best friend, and America's true heroes. Whether out on the front lines or here on the home front, our troops are sacrificing every day, making sure that we continue to have the freedoms that make this country great.
Hi, I'm Congressman Chris Stewart. As a former Air Force pilot, I understand that our troops and their families continue to give so much for our country. Let them know you appreciate their service. A simple thank you can go a long way.
Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Secure Freedom announces the launch of our newest initiative, the Counter Jihad Campaign at counterjihad.com. We have gathered some of the foremost experts and activists to begin our fight back against those who long ago declared war on us. You can see our first two ads asking those who see something bad happening, like the attack in Garland, Texas, or the dozen jihadists at the Boston Marathon Killers Mosque, to say something. Join us and be a part of the Counter Jihad.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word: answer. That's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. That's why we're here.
Do this better than any station in town.
Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. October 18th marked an important date for the nuclear deal with Iran. On this date, Adoption Day, the U.S. and the EU had to affirm that they will lift sanctions when the IAEA certifies that Iran has met several easy-to-meet requirements, probably later this year. The Iranian parliament had to agree to provisionally approve the NPT Additional Protocol, which gives IAEA inspectors greater access to Iranian nuclear sites. Meanwhile, however, Iranian leaders have made it clear they will not fully comply with the nuclear deal. Iran recently tested a long-range missile in violation of the deal. Tehran also placed some military sites off-limits to IAEA inspectors. In addition, Iran recently sent troops to Syria, probably paid for with sanctions relief from the nuclear deal. It is becoming more and more clear that critics who said last July that this deal is a sham had it exactly right. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are having a very, very important, very special hour-long conversation with one of the finest minds I know in the nexus between economics and finance and national security. He is the founder and CEO of Freeman Global Investment Counsel. He is also the founder of a marvelous new institute entitled the National Security Investment Counselors Institute, a vehicle for training those who manage people's money to understand and introduce into their recommendations national security mindedness. He previously worked for Sir John Templeton, one of the iconic figures in the financial sector, and has written two best-selling books, Secret Weapon and Game Plan. Kevin Freeman, again, thank you so much for your time. One of the things that you've written about at some length in Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack, is a subject that has recently been picked up by another author, Ted Koppel, in his book Lights Out. I think you must feel as gratified as I do to see someone of his prominence essentially confirming what the likes of thee and me have been saying about this vulnerability of our electric grid and the extent to which it really could pose an existential threat to our country. Have you had a chance to read Ted's book yet? And if so, what do you make of it?
I've skimmed it, and I've watched the interviews with him. I've not read it in detail, but I think it's a very worthy. Everything that he shared, I hold to be true with one minor exception, but the vulnerability issue of the grid is absolute. The fact that it could be attacked by cyber means is absolute. The fact that it would destroy the United States if the attack were successful is absolute. He does kind of downplay the issue of electromagnetic pulse weapons, which I think are very real, very viable, and on the intended path of some of the enemies of the United States. But overall, I think he brings a lot of attention to an absolutely essential subject.
And I had a chance to interview him, as you may know, on this program a week before last, I believe it was now. And he did acknowledge the reality of EMP. He just assigned, as many have said to, I'm sure, you as well as to me, that it is a low probability event. But given the high probability of its lethality on our country and the fact that countries are now obtaining the means by which to use it against us, including, it would appear, the Iranians, I think that those calculations of probability are probably understated substantially. Kevin, to the extent that cyber has been a particular focus of your work, and your warnings about economic attacks. You've mentioned, of course, in our previous discussions today, the Chinese activities in that space, stealing proprietary information, getting inside government computers and the like. Who else is doing that at the moment, and with what effect?
Well, we know the Russians have directly threatened the financial system of the United States. They've hacked into some of the inner workings of Wall Street, including the NASDAQ system. We caught some spies that allegedly were trying to use exchange-traded funds to cause a stock market collapse. We know the Iranians have hacked into a lot of the infrastructure, which would be water processing and dams and power plants and the grid. And we know that the North Koreans have been active in hacking attempts. And frighteningly, so has ISIS. ISIS has been attacking the grid according to FBI reports, on a regular and ongoing basis. They just haven't been very successful. The problem is you only have to be successful once.
Kevin, this brings me to your native state of Texas. It is a state which, of course, has the advantage over the rest of the country of having its own grid for most of its population. One of the things that I was enormously heartened by was a recent letter organized by Congressman Randy Weber in the House of Representatives and signed, I believe, by 22 of his colleagues in the Texas delegation to Governor Greg Abbott, urging him to make a priority of fixing the grid, hardening the Texas grid. How important would you make that argument to be in the terms of both the people of the state of Texas and as a model for the rest of the country?
No, it's absolutely essential. It's something you and I sat side by side in a Senate hearing in the Texas State Senate, making the argument that this needs to be done. And fortunately, some of the nationally prominent politicians from the state of Texas, in fact, the majority of them at least, have signed on to the idea, Governor Abbott, do this. You need to do this. And I think it's an acknowledgement to Texas. If the Texas grid were protected, it would provide a semblance of protection for the rest of the country, simply because if you can't wipe out the entire United States because Texas is protected, then you will much more likely suffer the repercussions of attacking us. So it really is an important thing for the whole country.
One of the senators, of course, in the state Senate with whom we spoke on that occasion, Kevin Freeman, was Senator Bob Hall. And I just want to do a shout out to him for the work that he's been doing inside the state of Texas, now complemented by his counterparts in the U.S. House of Representatives. I understand that Governor Abbott is now, in fact, seized with this problem, I assume as a result of all of these efforts, and if so, that it may actually make it possible for the Texas grid to get the kind of protection the whole nation needs. Kevin, you've had a chance to study this, as has Senator Hall, by the way, who worked on hardening things for the Air Force back in the 1960s, amazingly enough. How hard is it to protect the key assets, at least, that make up the backbone of the grid, notably these power generation facilities and high-voltage transformers?
You know, from an engineering standpoint, it's not anywhere near an impossibility. The same kind of things that you would protect the large-scale transformers from if it were an EMP attack or a cyber attack, you essentially just need to protect them from getting burned out. It requires focus and a certain amount of money. And I'm by no means an electrical engineer. Senator Hall is a brilliant man. I've known him for several years before he was Senator Hall, when he ran a Tea Party out of East Texas. But it's just not an impossibility. It just takes political resolve and a little bit of money. And if we have Governor Abbott behind it, as well as the congressional delegation from Texas supporting it, I think it's very doable. And that will be a huge leap forward in national security for our state and for, more importantly, the nation.
You know, I'm convinced, Kevin, that if, in fact, Governor Abbott leads, it will be a very, very compelling argument for his counterparts in all of the other states to take similar kinds of actions. It's hard to believe that any of them would be indifferent to the plight that would befall their constituents once constituents of other governors begin to be protected. And as you say, this is why it's so critical that this be done, because it will, in fact, translate, I think, into protection for the nation as a whole. And Kevin, in terms of the costs, have you had a chance to look at what the actual outlays would be for providing this kind of protection to our most critical of critical infrastructures?
You know, I'm by no means an expert, and the numbers seem just unbelievably reasonable relative to the external cost. We're talking, some of the figures I've seen have indicated that if you put it down on a household basis, and then obviously you'd have industry as well, you're talking about a very small monthly amount. That's not necessarily how it would be paid for, but it's how I can get my mind around it. It would be no different than all of these assorted charges that we have on our cell phone bills and everything else. You could slap a few dollars a month on a household and very likely cover every contingency.
I'm Kevin Freeman. We're going to have to take one last break. We will be back with more, and we'll talk with Kevin about energy warfare, the shape of things to come, and what it might mean for you. That and more straight ahead with Kevin Freeman at the Center for Security Policy right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
It's been over 7 years since a church group from another state brought a couple hundred refugees to the rural county where I live. I wanted to know, how could they do this? What was the governmental process that allowed the resettlement of refugees to a county ill-prepared to assimilate them? Employment opportunities were scarce. The health department was not familiar with illnesses and mental health problems of people who came from parts of the third world. The school system was not prepared to teach large numbers of students who didn't speak English.
That's author Ann Corcoran discussing her new book, Federal Immigration Policy, Resettlement and the Hijra to America. She explains how Muslim immigrants are being quietly resettled into American towns without vetting them, even for terrorist links. Corcoran also explains how the global jihad movement is using immigration as a stealth campaign to spread its influence in America. You can read Federal Immigration Policy, Resettlement, and the Hijra to America on securefreedom.org or purchase a copy on amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. The Obama administration's efforts to defend the controversial nuclear deal with Iran has become ugly, very ugly. Last week, during a speech at American University, the president portrayed opponents of the deal as partisan Republicans in common cause with Death to America chanting Iranian hardliners. The Tablet, a daily online Jewish magazine, ran an editorial on August 7th claiming that the president is using code anti-Semitic language to criticize Jewish Americans for opposing the Iran deal and to blame them if the deal is rejected by Congress. Some liberal pro-Obama groups have gone further and have questioned the loyalty to this country of Jewish members of Congress who oppose the deal, such as New York Senator Chuck Schumer. The president and his supporters are stooping to smearing opponents of the deal because the agreement is so awful and they cannot defend it on its merits. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Annie Soldier Incorporated was started in August 2003 as a simple family effort to help the soldiers in one Army unit, thus the name. However, due to overwhelming requests, on January 1, 2004, the Annie Soldier effort was expanded so it would include any member of any of the armed services in harm's way. Won't you please help? Find out how by going to www.anysoldier.com today.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for the fourth and final installment of our conversation with Kevin Freeman, one of the really knowledgeable, thoughtful, and articulate individuals in our country today on matters involving economic warfare and what it might mean for our financial sector and for our citizens, and so much more. His books really are required reading on this subject. The first, Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. The second, more recent, is Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the coming cyber economic attack. He is the founder and CEO of Freeman Global Investment Counsel, and I'm very pleased to say a senior fellow with the Center for Security Policy. Kevin, we've been talking about a number of different threats that sort of fit, broadly speaking, into your economic warfare portfolio. One that I know is of particular concern to you, coming from a state that is very big in the oil and gas business, of course, Texas, is what the Saudis have primarily been doing, I guess, to drive down the price of gasoline. Good for many of us in this country who pay for gas for our vehicles and heating our homes and the like. But what has it managed to do to the energy sector of the United States to this point?
Well, actually, to this point, it's lowered the rig count, but it has not lowered the American production of oil. We've maintained a pretty robust oil production, and are global leaders now, having displaced both Saudi Arabia and Russia. But having said that, it has put us on very unstable ground. The Saudis are hurting financially because they have allowed the price of oil to drop so dramatically. In the past, they've held it up by reducing production. They want to run out American production, the shale producers, the hydraulic fracking, and so forth. They want to put us out of business here in America so that they can then maintain and retain control globally of oil prices. And it's come at dear cost. It's put American oil companies in much worse financial condition. That was the intention.
The Saudis, in fact, said at one point that they sought to bankrupt the fracking industry, as I understand. Is that right?
That's exactly what they said. And they've also mentioned that it would be a weapon to be used against Russia and Iran. And in all cases, their means of attacking us has caused global economic disruption. It's benefited some who are oil importers, but it has hurt the oil producers, and it has destabilized the economy, and it lends itself to the dethroning of the reserve currency of the world, of the American dollars we talked about in the first segment. Yes, I think this is energy warfare, and it is a very mixed bag on all counts.
But the fact that it is persisting at this point, that the Saudis show no sign of letting up, suggests that more damage may yet be done to this very important part of our economy, and indeed with the kinds of ripple effects that you've talked about. Visit with us a little bit about Russia, Kevin, because it has, in fact, had collateral damage done to it. Has that imperiled the Russian regime of Vladimir Putin in much the way that the Chinese political system seems to be tottering?
Well, Putin has actually strengthened in his polling. Some would argue that that's not an accurate reflection, but he does not seem to have lost power. And in fact, we, in our foreign policy effort, particularly with Iran, have in a sense boosted him. When the Iranians get a hold of the $150 billion withheld from them, a good amount of that money they spend will be in Russia for military equipment and supplies. And so we've actually handed an offset to Russia / Iran during this oil price decline by striking the deal with them. Now would have been the perfect time to have maintained sanctions and perhaps collapsed the regime. Instead, we did the opposite. So Russia has actually strengthened, and their actions against ISIS have strengthened Putin's presence on the world stage. Whether he's attacking ISIS or not, the world thinks he is, and that's enhanced his position.
Speaking of Iran, Kevin, the Iranian government has, as you say, now achieved this extraordinary deal with the United States. The extent of its very adverse effects on our security and those of friends and allies and interests are, I guess, yet to be comprehended in their enormity. But that said, it's a pretty lousy deal. What is it likely to portend in terms of what the Iranians are capable of doing and likely to do should they be able to offset the effects of the Saudis driving the price of oil down by this found money?
It's just going to enhance their belligerence. It will enhance their willingness to use cyber means and attacks. It will enhance their willingness to fund economic warfare attacks, which they've done in the past and will likely do in the future. It will push them towards Russia. We've essentially weakened our position in every case by striking this deal, and it does not prevent their long-term development of nuclear weapons.
When you talk about energy warfare, Kevin, one other place, we talked a little bit earlier with respect to the Chinese, in which this seems to be playing out, is at the so-called global climate conference underway in Paris at the moment. As you look at two aspects of this in particular, the war on coal aspect, particularly at the hands of Barack Obama and his regulations domestically, and secondly, the Green Climate Fund, a means of transferring wealth from the first world to the third. How does this fit into the larger dynamic that you've been talking about, in which enemies of this country, some declared, some incipient, some perhaps simply helping those who are, how does this play out with respect to their agenda versus ours?
Seems on every front, in every direction, we are diminishing our capabilities to wage economic war while simultaneously enhancing those of our enemies. A perfect example, back to the admission of the Chinese yuan into the IMF basket of currencies, we've just lost the ability to use our economic warfare and sanctions, because now there is a way to obtain hard currency that is not an American path. In the climate change, we will put the highest standards on the United States, and we will allow lower standards for our competitors, whether they're actual enemies or adversaries, or maybe they're just economic competitors. In every instance, in every direction, it seems that this administration has taken the opposite of American interests into the negotiating table. And for the immigration is the same sort of thing. We'll bring the immigrants in while Europe is tightening their scrutiny of immigration. The Obama administration has said, no, we've got to admit them in. And they said, we already have high enough standards, even though the FBI director says that we barely screen them. We can't screen people we don't know about, and so forth. So in every climate, the Iran deal, the oil situation, where we ought to be producing as much American energy as possible, every single way we turn, it seems to be an anti-American position.
A very, very ominous situation indeed, but one that we are very grateful to you for closely monitoring and reporting on, and thereby raising the alarm with the rest of us. Kevin Freeman of the Freeman Global Investment Council, the author of Game Plan and Secret Weapon, and the founder of the National Security Investment Counselors Institute. We're grateful for your help in all of these regards. Kevin, keep up the good work. Come back to us again soon, and I hope the rest of you will do the same again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.